Hey folks, happy Monday, and I hope you're enjoying your Memorial Day weekend, because I can't. The life of a temp worker means no holidays, well, except for Thanksgiving and Christmas. So, lucky all of you with better employment. Mackenzie Lambert here, your host for Making the Movies. After a long hiatus and some tribulation, I can now return to a schedule for producing content for the podcast. I've had car issues, I've had to take up a second job, an overnight shift, and then I quit the second job, and I'm in the process of getting clients through People Inc., and I'm just trying to get out of the temp life. Busy, but still able to produce content. For this episode, we have five films on the docket as we go through part two of our look at the films of the Italian comedy duo Bud Spencer and Terrence Hill. We'll be taking a look at All the Way Boys, Watch Out We're Mad, Blackie the Pirate, Crime Busters, and finish with Odds and Evens. I've already provided a background on the duo in episode 12, all the way back in December. Feel free to check that out if you missed it the first time. Let's get into the movies. All the Way Boys features Plata and Salud, pilots for hire who aim to profit from their aerial skills. They have a knack for crashing airplanes, and Salud's brother collects the insurance. The film opens with the duo wreaking havoc on an airfield. They strut with nonchalance as firefighters and paramedics rush to the crash site. There doesn't seem to be a plot, as there is a few vignettes strung together. They find a fixer-upper for themselves. After fixing the plane, they have an idea for being a traveling bar. There's a dramatic sequence where Salud flies a wounded man in the middle of the night for medical attention. The main plot element is a mining community who are oppressed by the hearing-impaired Mr. Ears and his henchmen. He has enough influence to manipulate the emerald prices on the black market. Plata and Salud take a fight to Mr. Ears to help the mining community. All the Way Boys is the first film for Spencer and Hill that steered away from the spaghetti western roots. This film brought them into a contemporary context. This was in 1972, with the spaghetti western genre coming to a close within a few years. To further distance themselves from their semi-serious westerns, this was a hint of them adopting a more comedic bent. A drawback for me is the feeling of aimlessness in the plot. Similar to Adios Amigo, All the Way Boys seems like a string of vignettes featuring the characters of Plata and Salud. One could easily slice up the film and format them like Three Stooges shorts. The sequences feel separate from themselves. Spencer and Hill are reunited with Giuseppe Colisi. Colisi directed the pair for their Cat and Hutch trilogy of God Forgives, I Don't, Ace High, and Boot Hill. The film takes itself seriously but injects some humor in the fight sequences. Don't let some of the film's marketing fool you. This is not an actual entry in the Trinity series. Same for Boot Hill. After the positive reception to their work on Trinity Is Still My Name, the musically gifted siblings, Maurizio and Guido De Angelis, provided a nice music score, one that makes the film worth watching. It's a diverse score, akin to Goblin's work for Romero's Dawn of the Dead. You get different sounds that come from various genres. The track at the opening, Il Matto, is a Latin guitar baroque piece. Valse fra amici is a sweeping waltz, absolutely belonging in a ballroom. ¶¶ piece Gliamici stands out to me. Translated into English, the phrase means friends, but it is clearly an instrumental take on the Buddy Miles track, Them Changes. Allow me to illustrate. I'll do a back-to-back fade. First, I'll play Them Changes, which came out in 1970, followed by Gliamici from 1972. This is the film that gave us the De Angelis staple, Flying Through the Air. Interestingly enough, the song's lyrics were co-written by Bud Spencer. The song would reach number 4 on the German music charts and number 8 on the Austrian charts. Spencer and Hill have a good time and retain their chemistry from their spaghetti westerns. Spencer is grumpy, but in a teddy bear manner. He uses it to his advantage as a contrast to Hill. That is the key to any film duo, contrast. Hill as Plata plays with the troublemaker that makes life a pain for Salud. Riccardo Puzziti is an actor we saw in the Trinity films, and we'll see him frequently in this block as well. He made a career for himself working with Bud Spencer in both the films with Terrence Hill and Spencer's solo films. He made a nice niche for himself, being Spencer's personal on-screen punching bag. Those with a keen eye will see him in the Castellari spaghetti western, Any Gun Can Play, which I reviewed in Episode 7 as part of Volume 1 of the Grindhouse Experience. If you've played the Spencer and Hill video game, Slaps and Beans, you'll notice some of the enemies are modeled after him. The only other cast member that stands out was Antoine Saint-Jean, who played one of Mr. Ears' henchmen. With a distinct look like that, it's hard to forget him. We saw him as the artist Schweik in Lucio Fulci's The Beyond. All the Way, Boys was the first film for the duo of Bud Spencer and Terrence Hill away from the spaghetti western genre. The plot feels disjointed, but Spencer and Hill are amusing to watch. The music score by Guido and Maurizio De Angelis is a highlight. This one isn't for those new to the films of Spencer and Hill. This one is more for the veterans. Watch Out, We're Mad, Big Ben and Kid are rival stock car drivers. They are going to compete in a race where the winner will receive a special dune buggy. Unfortunately, the race ends with Ben and Kid in a tie, resulting in them having to share the buggy. To solve the issue, they agree on a hot dog eating and beer drinking contest. In the midst of their contest, a group of gangsters come in and start dismantling the carnival. To avoid the chaos, Ben and Kid try to leave in the dune buggy. On the way out, they're stopped and ordered to get out. They refuse and gun for the exit. The gangsters stop them, destroying the dune buggy in the process. Furious, Ben and Kid go to the boss, who directed his men to invade the carnival. Both men demand a dune buggy to replace the one the boss's men damaged. While keen to solve the dispute, the doctor, the psychiatrist of the boss, wants him to refuse the request to show he is the one in control of the situation. Ben and Kid proceed to cause more trouble for the boss. The situation escalates to the point where the boss has to fall on drastic measures. At the behest of the doctor, the boss brings in Paganini, an assassin of the Chicago Mafia. Watch Out, We're Mad may not only be the epitome of the Bud Spencer and Terrence Hill action comedy, but for me, it's my favorite of what I've seen so far. The film contains all the elements that would characterize the type of film they presented. The prized Doom Buggy is one of those iconic vehicles and associated with the duo. It's a red buggy with a yellow canvas top. For a live concert performance in Budapest a few years ago, Guido and Maurizio De Angelis were driven to the stage in such a Doom Buggy. Much to my surprise, the film has a G rating. Despite all the fisticuffs, this is considered a family-friendly movie. But the fistfights are done in such a cartoonish manner to the point where it's hard to take them seriously. I think that's a big part of the appeal of these movies. This one in particular is their blatant cartoonish nature. This is harmless fun. The film features some of the best-known music of the career of Guido and Maurizio De Angelis, a.k.a. Oliver Onions. You have the famous chorus sequence.
Un, due, tre, quattro.
The main song Doom Buggy was a big hit in the European market, reaching number 8 on the German charts and 12 on the Austrian charts.
Come with me for fun in my buggy.
Some great work here by the De Angelis brothers. Another highlight was the stunt work of Remy Julien, one of the greatest stuntmen and stunt coordinators in film. The rallycross race features a lot of high-octane, intense driving stunts. One amusing sequence has a car driven by Ben and Kid that is set on fire, and they make their way through the city streets to a car wash to douse the flames. I love these classic sequences because they were done for real. You can actually see a real car on fire driving through real streets. Julien makes a cameo as a thug on the motorcycle. This was the only time for director Marcel Fandado to work with Spencer and Hill. Unlike Colisi and Enzo Barboni, who worked with the pair for multiple films, Fandado only worked with them on this film. And it's the film that best represents the type of comedy that Spencer and Hill presented. Fandado was best known for his work as a screenwriter. His credits include Black Sabbath, Blood and Black Lace, the underrated heist film Grand Slam, and a slew of Bud Spencer solo films. Spencer and Hill are great here. They are antagonistic, but there's a bit of playfulness on the part of Hill. This helps lighten up their rivalry until they have a common enemy to team up against. The on-screen duo of Jean Sharp and Donald Pleasance have their own chemistry as the neurotic boss and the schizo doctor. The boss, dressed as if he was Adrian Adonis with pink frills, wants to be a tough guy but holds himself back. The doctor keeps pushing him, only for the situation to get worse for them. Sharp has a number of big credits, ranging from the original Wicker Man, Barry Lyndon, Jabberwocky, and Top Secret. Pleasance will forever be associated with the role of Dr. Loomis from the Halloween franchise. In minor but memorable roles, you have Rocco Liro as one of the combative gymnasts. Liro was a frequent player in Stuntman, Spaghetti Westerns, and Palazzo Teschi. Emilio Laguna is amusing as the perfectionist conductor of the choir. Manuel de Blais plays Paganini, the hitman from the Chicago Mafia. He is an update of a common figure of the Spencer and Hill comedies. He comes off as a serious, intimidating hired gun before being made a complete fool of by the heroes. We saw this with the pair of stone-faced gunmen in They Call Me Trinity. De Blas continues that tradition with Paganini. I thoroughly enjoyed Watch Out, We're Mad. What's not to love about this film? Spencer and Hill at their peak, Donald Pleasence and John Sharp hamming it up, the music of Oliver Onions, Remy Julien at the driver's seat. This is my top pick of the bunch for this episode. Blackie the Pirate opens with a small seaport under the control of the Viceroy. He's enforced a curfew. There are bodies hung in the village square serving as a warning. Despite this, Blackie and his associates go to the local tavern. They enter the tavern in the midst of a barroom brawl. Martin demands help for the fight. With Blackie's permission granted, Moco literally swan dives into the brawling crowd. The fight is interrupted by the guards of the Viceroy. Surprisingly, one of the combatants is Don Pedro, a member of Spanish royalty. With his influence, everyone involved in the fight goes away without legal issues. Blackie has his eyes on a shipment of gold belonging to the Viceroy, as do three other pirates, Montbarque, Visbarque, and Skull. On their island of Tortuga, they auction off two women recently abducted. Blackie recognizes one of the women as the wife of the Viceroy, but Skull also recognizes the wife of the Viceroy. Blackie wins the auction and walks away with the wife of the Viceroy. Skull offers to split the gold of the Viceroy with Blackie, but Blackie refuses. This not only puts Blackie at odds with the other pirate bosses, but now he has the Viceroy coming after him. Can Blackie come out on top against such odds? I'm sure some of you are scratching your heads. Why am I reviewing this 1971 film instead of the 1974 film Two Missionaries, a.k.a. Turn the Other Cheek? I was unable to locate a legal viewable version of the film. I can't stomach searching for a bootleg or pirated version of the film. So I substituted Blackie the Pirate in place of Two Missionaries because I was able to find a legal stream version to watch. The film itself is a decent viewing if you approach it as a solo Terrence Hill film that happens to feature Bud Spencer. Hill carries the film on his own, which is a key factor with Blackie the Pirate. The marketing of this film was very misleading. Blackie the Pirate came out the same year as Trinity is Still My Name, and a year after They Call Me Trinity. These two highly successful spaghetti westerns helped make Spencer and Hill household names. Of course, the marketing for Blackie the Pirate is going to take advantage of this. Most of the pirates feature Hill, rightfully so, because he is the lead actor, but they prominently feature Bud Spencer despite the fact that he's in a supporting role and has limited screen time. The posters would have you think he plays as big a role in the film as Hill. With Spencer and Hill tackling the pirate genre, I imagine the fate of the pirate genre played out the same way as it did for both Spaghetti Westerns and Palazzo Teschi. Once the pair made a film in a genre, it signaled the end of the genre. Italian pirate films were being made way past their prime of the genre as it was in the U.S., which is impressive nonetheless. But I imagine the genre in Italy died shortly after Blackie the Pirate. Director Lorenzo Gigapali doubled as the film's writer. He does a fine job making a pirate film on a very small budget. How do I know it's a small budget? There is plenty of stock footage of pirate ships at sea and during battles. We see very little of the actors on pirate ship sets. The film's music by Gino Paguri is fine. The main theme is very catchy, which played during the segue at the top of the review. Other than that, there really isn't much else to say about the film's score, but it served the film just fine.
Ship ahoy, says the captain to the men. Get the cannons on the ready, we're in business once again. Ship ahoy, says the pirate black and bold. He salutes the Jolly Roger, then he takes away the gold.
As a lead, Terrence Hill can command a scene. He has the charisma and charm needed in such a film, similar to Errol Flynn. Pascual Basile, Fernando Bilbao, and Sal Borghese do well as Blackie's loyal crewmen. All three were also stuntmen, which allowed them to stay on screen as much as possible. That's one of the draws of these films. You see actors doing their own stunts, which was very rare for the 1970s. Bud Spencer, in a supporting role, makes the most of his screen time. Normally, he plays the teddy bear tough guy type. Here, he plays a character with authority and some menace. Spencer and Hill have little interaction, save for about three or four scenes. Luciano Pigozzi plays one of the three pirate bosses, Montbarc. Pigozzi was a regular in Italian cinema, mostly exploitation. Diana Loris plays the tavern maiden, but I recognized her as the Spanish princess Elizabeth in the Twilight spaghetti western Get Mean. Blackie the Pirate is a good film and a decent swashbuckling adventure flick. Hill is great in the lead role, the film spotlights him, but also gives the supporting cast time to shine. Just remember this is Hill's film and not part of the Spencer and Hill series. Busters centers on Wilbur Walsh and Matt Kirby, two men unemployed and down on their luck. First, Wilbur goes to the docks in Miami looking for work. But the corrupt owner of the docks and his henchmen try to kick him out, only for Wilbur to beat them all up and smash their car. Matt arrives for the exact same reason, gets the same welcome, the same guys get beat up, and another car is wrecked. When Wilbur and Matt meet the same guys as a pair moments later, the dock owner and his men proceed to smash a third car themselves. Still looking for work, Matt lets Wilbur in on an idea he's had for a while, robbing a supermarket. Wilbur is reluctant about the idea, but he goes along with it. They go through a back door behind the supermarket and sneak up to the nearest door. They jump in and see that it's a police office. Quickly, they pretend they're just passing by, yet end up signing up for service as policemen. Under Captain McBride, they go through weeks of training to be the best new trainees in Miami. Shortly after finishing, they meet Susie, a woman whose uncle was murdered. It turns out the bad guys at the docks are connected to the murder and are part of a bigger scheme. Their investigations have them facing the likes of Geronimo and his thugs, even squaring off at the Orange Bowl Stadium. With They Call Me Trinity, Spencer and Hill marked the near end of the spaghetti western genre. Blackie the Pirate signaled the near end of the pirate genre in Italy. With Crime Busters, Spencer and Hill put a finish on the Eurocrime poliziotteschi genre. To say it's their fault for bringing the end to such genres is unfair. In the 2012 documentary, Eurocrime, the Italian cop and gangster films that ruled the 70s, it was the practice of the Italian film industry themselves that showed how they put those genres to an end. The Italian industry had a knack for just exploiting more successful American films and then making so many films they fled the market, watering them down and lowering the value. Thus, in the end, they killed their own industry. There are a number of great set pieces. Matt calls the police warning them of Wilbur looking to commit suicide, and that leads to a humorous encounter. How the duo becomes involved with the police department and graduate police training is hilarious. There is the brawl in the hamburger restaurant and the closing brawl at the bowling alley. Crime Busters is one of the funniest films I've seen from the pair of Spencer and Hill. It ranks right up there with They Call Me Trinity and Watch Out, We're Mad. The effectiveness of the comedy comes to no surprise, considering that the director is Enzo Barboni. The director of both They Call Me Trinity and Trinity Is Still My Name. Barboni wrote the screenplay. He knows how to really bring out the comedic energies of the pair. Guido and Maurizio De Angelis offer an instrumental track that is essentially the theme of the film. It has a country-western twang that is a nice callback to Barboni, Spencer, and Hill working together on the Trinity films. While not as catchy or poppy as Doom Buggy or Flying Through the Air, it's a track that fits the film, and sometimes that's all you need. ¶¶ antagonism between Spencer and Hill is really played up in the beginning, with Wilbur merely tolerating Matt. But once they become cops, their Laurel and Hardy chemistry really kicks in. David Huddleston was the big surprise for me. I didn't expect to see him here. He was an excellent foil for Spencer and Hill to play off of. Huddleston, as Captain McBride, reminded me of Richard Fisk in the Three Stooges short, Dizzy Pilots.
If you think this train is going to be a picnic, you got another thought coming. In 20 weeks' time, I'm going to teach you how to make a proper arrest, how to drive a car at 200 miles an hour, how to tell the difference between marijuana and parsley. In short, I'm going to turn you into super goddamn cops. In exchange for that, the taxpayers are going to give you $250 a week. They're going to give you a paid vacation, a Christmas bonus, beautiful uniform, a lot of respect and esteem. In addition to that, at the end of 20 weeks' time, you're going to love me like your own father. Cut, cut! How will we rest?
I'm going to show you how to do the manual of arms. Port, arms! Present, arms! Now do it just like I did it. Port, arms! Present, arms!
He played such a great straight man to the duo's antics. Huddleston is recognizable to fans of movies like Blazing Saddles, Santa Claus the Movie, and The Big Lebowski. Black Emmanuel herself, Laura Jemser, has a supporting role as Susie. This might be one of the few roles where she kept her clothes on. She doesn't have much to do except for being a possible love interest for Matt, but she does get the main plot of the film rolling after the police training hijinks. Luciano Rossi stands out as the Native American decked Geronimo. He will raise eyebrows, but I give him a pass since they spared him the indignity of wearing red face. Back again are Ricardo Puzzuti, Claudio Ruffini, and Rocco Lero in minor roles as henchmen and thugs. We also have two Dell'Acqua siblings. Ottaviano is one of Geronimo's men, but I couldn't pick him out during either the confrontation with Geronimo or the football field brawl. Roberto plays one of the thugs that tries to rob the burger joint. Coming off of the average offering that was Blackie the Pirate, Crime Busters was an excellent viewing. This is almost as good as They Call Me Trinity and Watch Out We're Mad. Being the third best film is not bad. Not bad at all. Evens opens with U.S. Navy Lieutenant Johnny Firpo engaging in various competitions on behalf of the Navy. He is their top football player and their top sea racer. In the middle of a race, Johnny's speedboat stalls in the water. First, he suspects the transporter Charlie. His superiors believe the sabotage was the work of illegal bookmakers operating in the Miami area. Reports are coming out that they're rigging local competitions and they want Johnny to investigate. Hijinks ensue as Johnny investigates along with the assistance of Charlie, who turns out to be his brother. Odds and Evens may be one of the weaker films in the Spencer and Hill comedies, certainly in the pacing department. In two instances, the gag is milked for too long. The gag being Johnny doesn't know how to play cards, yet he puts himself in high-risk situations when a card game is involved. Another gag, played for too long, is Johnny asking Charlie for pistachio ice cream, after being repeatedly told that the pistachio is melted. However, there are a few moments that were so absurd I couldn't help but laugh hysterically at them. One brief subplot has Charlie in love with a nun hitchhiker. When Charlie thinks he sees the same nun, he stops only to realize it's Johnny in drag. Another subplot is a group of thugs are sent to kidnap the baby of one of the athletes that's supposed to lose for them. It's dark, but in the minimal light, we can see the baby is actually Charlie in disguise. Seeing Bud Spencer dress as a giant baby may be one of the funniest things I've ever seen in their films. One sequence has Spencer disguised as a marked competitor, donning a curly-haired wig. It was such a goofy sight, I couldn't help but laugh. There are funny bits, but they are few and far between. While the previous films played up the fist fights as cartoonish, this one adds some bits of realism that came off as being totally out of place. Here we see guys get their teeth knocked out, spinning them out. It was something I hadn't seen previously in their films, and it honestly took me out of the film. Overall, the film feels like a weak effort and should only be viewed by those who are veterans of their films. Odds and Evens was directed, oddly enough, by Sergio Corbucci. Corbucci was a key figure in the spaghetti western genre. He gave us the original Django with Franco Nero, Navajo Joe with Burt Reynolds, and Compañeros with Tomas Milian. Corbucci also gave us such comedies as The White, The Yellow, and The Black, The Con Artist with Anthony Quinn, and the Terrence Hill solo comedy Superfuzz. He was able to adapt to changes in filming trends that were necessary in the Italian film industry. Guido and Maurizio De Angelis provide a music score based around a poppy song. This time, the song is Brotherly Love. I couldn't find any of the charting information, but it has an early 80s Phil Collins feel. The use of the brass and backing vocals were a precursor to tracks like Mist Again and Paperlight. Between Spencer and Hill is noticeably weaker than in previous films. They come off as tired, lacking the energy in some of the scenes that were meant to be comedic. Also, age is becoming a factor as the fights lack the elaborate elements of previous films, notably Hill's acrobatic Harold Lloyd moments from They Call Me Trinity and Crime Busters. Sal Borghese, Riccardo Pizzuti, Claudio Ruffini, and Giovanni Cianfrigla return in bit roles as gangsters and henchmen. Keep an eye out for Salvatore Basile as a gangster with a cigar. We later see Basile as a military escort in Cannibal Holocaust. I know this one comes off as being the obviously short film review of the episode. There's just not a lot to say about this film. If you're a diehard Spencer and Hill fan, you'll enjoy this one. But if you're new to the duo, I would hold off on seeing this one. And that finishes this second parter of Bud Spencer and Terrence Hill. I'll wait till closer to the end of the year before I upload part 3. While they made plenty of films as a pair, there are many films to explore where they were on their own. You can definitely expect 2 episodes looking at their solo films when I'm done with their duo films. And yes, I'll have an episode on the knockoff duo of Paul L. Smith and Antonio Cantafora. Next time on Making the Movies, we're doing a little homage to the classic TV series Mystery Science Theater 3000. We're going to take a look at 5 or 6 of the films featured prominently on that show and see how they hold up without the clever witticisms of Joel, Mike, and the Bots. It'll be a Without the Riffs episode of Making the Movies. That'll drop on Monday, June 10th. I know I said Friday would be the upload day, but now it's Monday again. If you enjoyed this content and haven't subscribed, please do so. That way you can stay on top of future content as it's released. You can find this show on the streaming platform of your choice, Podomatic, iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play Music. If you want this channel to grow, feel free to give a one-time donation to my PayPal. I'm on social media, Twitter and Facebook. All of that in the description below. Until next time, this is Mackenzie Lambert from Making the Movies. Take care, everyone.